ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You and I might seem a little different, but one thing we share in common is experiencing challenging life events and having to keep on working at the same time. Whether it's death of a loved one, the breakdown of a relationship, or losing your job, these can be some of the most difficult times in your career. It's time to talk about grief at work. Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. Accepting that grief is a natural part of your life and your work is the first step, but there are lots of things that can help too. And a warning, this conversation may cover some difficult topics. There are links on our website you can use to access support if you need. Diane Bergeron is a senior research scientist at the Centre for Creative Leadership. One of her areas of research is grief and loss in the workplace. Diane, welcome.
Lisa, thank you. It's so nice to be here with you.
So, Diane, I do understand that there's a personal reason that led you to research grief and loss at work. Are you okay to share a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. There were actually two. So the first is when I was a senior in high school. One of my younger brothers was hit by a car and killed. And then about 17 and a half years ago, I was pregnant with identical twins. And everything was fine throughout the whole pregnancy. The labor was fine. They were full term, 6.5 pounds, 6.25 pounds. And there was something with the umbilical cord. And so when our first son, Caleb, was born, he was stillborn because he had lost 30% of his blood in literally just a few seconds to go through the birth canal. And so they transfused him. But by the time they resuscitated him, it was 20 minutes later. Mm-hmm. His Apgar scores were 0 and 1. And so he was brain dead. And then they immediately did an emergency C-section to get the other my other son out. So I, you know, have a daily reminder of what is here and what is missing, right? Because they are identical twins. And so my surviving son is now 17 and a half and is 6'4".
Diane,
yeah.
Wow.
So it was, so it's very personally driven and really with a desire to not have anyone else have to go through, you know, I just feel like it doesn't have to be as difficult as I think it is right now and it was back then.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Diane. In our research, among other things, grief and loss at work. Tell us about your research.
Sure. My research is specifically on bereavement, right? And so bereavement is the death of someone significant. And so to me, I think I have the personal interest there. But the other reason I study is to me, it's the most pure kind of loss. And so if we can really understand that kind of loss, maybe we can extrapolate to other types of grief, right? Because even with other types of grief, from a relationship loss, chronic illness, right? Like there's always the chance that the situation can change. And I feel like bereavement is the one situation where, you know, it's not going to change. So in terms of what I've studied, you know, looking at the impact of grief on how it lowers employee engagement and job satisfaction, how bereavement leave impacts perceptions of the organization as supportive. And then in another study, we looked at, you know, well, what are the challenges in returning back to work? And, you know, they are significant. There's so much impact on mental capacity and managing emotions at work, and even just, you know, the social interactions at work. There was, you know, because I think loneliness is a big issue after bereavement. And part of it is because your world has changed so completely that you almost cannot relate to other people whose worlds have not changed, right? So that's one thing. But then the other thing is there are a lot of coworkers, managers who are very uncomfortable with death and, you know, grief. And there was one participant that said, because I think her child also died, she would be walking down the hallway and coworkers would literally duck into the boardroom or the bathroom to avoid
really?
Talking with her. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a kind of a messy ball of yarn at work.
And we're going to have a look at how you could actually support a work colleague who is grieving in a bonus episode that we will drop in our feed as well. And guess what? It's not hiding from them. So
right. Exactly.
I'm not revealing anything here, but we will look at a better way maybe to support your work colleague.
Yeah. Let's set the bar low.
Now, you've mentioned a lot of things, but what did you learn specifically about what it's like to go back to work as a grieving employee?
It's so idiosyncratic to the employee. So some people go back and they want support. They want to talk about the deceased person. You know, they want to share. And then there are other people that go back with the mentality of, do not talk to me. Don't bring it up. Work is my safe place. Right? Because I think especially with bereavement is it's such a loss of control that for some people going back to work actually returns that semblance of control.
And what do we know then about the impact of grief on an employee's ability to work? What is happening?
There's a lot of what we call cognitive disorganization. So there's a, you know, a difficulty focusing or concentrating. I've had research participants say, you know, they had to go back and check their work. They were afraid of making errors. There was even one person that said that someone else was standing in front of them talking and they literally could not make meaning out of the words being said, right? So I think we absolutely underestimate the neurological impact of grief. You know, and then beyond that, the physicality of grief. I think people underestimate just how absolutely fatiguing it is and how it requires so many resources, you know, emotional, cognitive, energetic, you know, and then if you add things like sleep disruption or higher rates of illness on top of that, you know, it just exacerbates everything.
Diane, I'm actually processing some grief right now. And on Friday night, I totally forgot to go to a presentation I'd agreed to do. And
wow.
I'm lucky because, like, I'm super reliable. So they actually called me when I wasn't there super early. I haven't done that in 10 years, I think. Missed something.
Oh my gosh.
And I was, and that was my little wake up call for actually, I feel like I'm going okay, but just pay attention.
Exactly. Well, and that's the other thing is I almost think it's not until your years past it where you can look back and realize how poor your cognitive functioning is. Because if you had asked me at the time when I was at work, I would have said, no, like I can work. I'm doing this okay, right? But then when I look back, I'm like, maybe not.
I'll have to ask producer Michelle about how I'm tracking. So what helps then an employee who is experiencing grief manage at work?
I think a lot of it depends on the work context and so and on the employee, right, in terms of what they want and what they don't want. And so what we know about grief, and this is where I feel like we really need to raise awareness about grief, because one of the things people hold on to is the five stages of grief by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, which is a total myth. So her research was actually on terminally ill cancer patients coming to terms with their own death. It had nothing to do with bereavement. And so, but this myth is in our kind of society. And so it sets the expectation from other people of like, oh, what stage are you in, right? Almost like you're going to get through this, right? Like, let me know when you get to the end of it.
Which step are you up to? Just give me the number.
Exactly. Yeah. Right, right.
Interesting.
So, and actually how grief works is that you tend to oscillate between really facing and confronting the grief. So looking at photos, maybe going to the cemetery, talking about the deceased person. And then you kind of flip to having to deal with the fact that you're still going on in life. And so maybe it means you have to assume new roles, right? Like if it was a spouse that died, maybe you have to learn to cook, right? So it's this oscillation between grieving and then trying to move forward with life. And so for me, when you asked what helps employees at work, I feel like let's work with that natural oscillation process, right? Like let employees come in late, leave early, let them have a reduced schedule. One of the other challenges when people go back to work, especially if they're client-facing or customer-facing roles. There was one participant that said, I had no patience for dealing with this, you know, minutia of this customer service problem. So I feel like, you know, can you temporarily move to the person to a less stressful role? So any ways that organizations can accommodate that, you know, and I think often coworkers are good about trying to protect someone who's bereaved, but it can be difficult, right? Because the pace of work is so fast, people go on and we've actually lost the markers to show that people are bereaved, right? It used to be that you wore certain, you know, like a black armband or you wore black for a period of time. So we've lost those markers that basically said to societal members, hey, let's protect this person. They're suffering. Mm. So it's a lot of it's invisible now.
Chris Hall is a psychologist and the CEO of Grief Australia, an independent, not-for-profit organisation striving to change the way Australia lives with grief. Chris, welcome to This Working Life.
Lovely to be with you.
Chris, in your experience, how is the way we feel about work affected after a big loss?
Well, I think the experience of grief affects our entire world. What many grieving people are dealing with is kind of relearning themselves. Who am I now in the wake of this experience? And also it's about relearning the world. How do I actually live in this world in a way that's meaningful? How do I make sense of it? And often what we find is that the meaning of work changes. The people will say things, you know, I go to work to earn an income to support my wife, my family, my child. And with often their loss, that sense of meaning and purpose is eroded. I think we often think about grief as an emotional response. And whereas that's true, it's much bigger than that. You know, it affects the way we think, as Diane has said so eloquently. It affects our relationships. People don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. So they often say and do nothing. And so whereas social support we know is such a protective factor for people, what people often find is that people just vaporize. They disappear because of that anxiety that they have. It also affects our kind of fundamental beliefs about kind of the meaning and nature of life and big spiritual questions about, you know, where is my loved one now? How do I make sense of that? And of course, people don't leave their grief at home. They come to work. And I think, as Diane said again so eloquently, the idea that we kind of have a public and private face to our grief. And for some people, they don't want to share that private experience of grief at work. But for others, that's an important set of connections.
Now, Chris, we received this voice memo. It's from Joyce. Mm-hmm. And this is in response to my LinkedIn post about managing grief at work. Here's Joyce.
I had lost a long-term childhood friend. And I remember going back into the office and how surreal it felt that the office was normal, buzzing, yet everything in my world had shifted. And I felt like I was standing still and everything else was spinning around me. And I would say, like, what I needed at that point was to just have colleagues who have the emotional awareness to sense that something was not quite right and to be gentle with me, not necessarily ask what's going on, but just to have that emotional sensitivity.
Chris, what comes to mind when you hear Joyce's story?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind is that we need grief-literate workplaces. We need managers, we need colleagues who know something about the nature of grief. You know, the grief is not like the flu, where you have a couple of bad days and life returns to normal. You know, we have this very strong kind of cultural view that by the time you've defrosted the last casserole, thrown out the last bunch of flowers, that life gets back to normal. We have this idea that there's this emotional promised land where everything's done and dusted. In a fundamental sense, we never get over grief. We don't arrive at a point where it's all done and dusted. And so I think what we need to do is to speak less and listen more. We need to kind of empower people, give them choices about how they would like this experience managed. Some people want to come to work and they want work to be as it always was, as a kind of a safe place. Others want to be able to talk to people and be with people. I spoke to a man recently whose wife had died. He's a senior manager. He talks about going to work and it's one of the few parts of his life that hasn't changed. And the last thing he wants to do is talk about it. But he also described that he lies in bed at night and he cries till his ears are full. He can't sleep. he kind of ruminates about what's happened. He's found that he can get to sleep by putting a few drops of perfume on her side of the bed. And so this idea of a kind of a public and private face of grief is I think, really important. And have these conversations before people turn up so that we actually are able to kind of meet people's needs.
Mm. So interesting there about the separation and the fact that we've somehow have solace in the separation, but actually I'm not sure whether we're integrating things very well if we're putting it in a box for 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
Diane, did you have any reflections on Joyce's story?
What came to mind is there's something called shattered worlds theory. And it's basically when you have a traumatic event, it's almost like it shatters everything you think. And that's exactly what Chris was talking about. And that is what I think I was sharing part of my experience is it's so hard to reconcile the fact that you live in a different world and everyone else lives in a different world. I can literally remember going grocery shopping and wanting to shake everyone I saw and just yell, like you cannot be going as if life is normal, right? And I remember reading something and I felt like it captured this so beautifully. There's some tribe that when there's a death in someone's family in that village, it's like that night everyone goes out and puts all of their furniture on their front lawn. So that when that grieving family walks out of their house, it's almost like they see the evidence that the whole world has changed. And so it matches their inner reality. And I just thought that was so beautiful. I thought that was so beautiful.
Well, we just had the hard rubbish pick up in our neighborhood. So I feel like that naturally happened around me. And I'll see it as being symbolic now, Diane. Thank you. All right, Chris, let's talk about the best way for a manager or leader to respond to an employee's grief. Can you give us an example?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is to understand that grief is personal, it's idiosyncratic. And we talk a lot about the golden rule, you know, treat people as we would like to be treated. And that really doesn't work in grief. We really need to understand what that person needs. So again, we need to listen. We need to listen athletically to people. We need to empower people, give them choices. They're often dealing with a choiceless experience. And to be able to restore a sense of making choices about what work might look like, flexibility in terms of the nature of work. I think it's really important culturally too that managers have an awareness of the different approaches within cultures.
Chris, you mentioned this listening athletically. Can you just give us some useful questions that we might ask if we're a manager?
What do you need from me? What might work look like for you in the next weeks and months? What are the sorts of tasks that you might need some release for? It's really about going from a position of curiosity in terms of that person's experience, rather than addressing that in some kind of prescriptive way. And sometimes people aren't quite sure what they want. So keeping that bridge, keeping that conversation open is really important.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong, and we're learning about managing grief at work. My guests are Chris Hall of Grief Australia and social psychologist and researcher Diane Bergeron from the Centre for Creative Leadership. Obviously, bereavement, Chris, is the most extreme type of loss, or as Diane would say, actually the most pure. But there are other kinds of loss that affect our ability to work as well. So can you talk about some of those?
We often have a sort of a hierarchy of loss, and death is often at the top of that hierarchy. But we know that there are other sorts of losses that can be kind of equally, and some might argue even more problematic because they're actually acknowledged less. So the grief of separation and divorce, for example, we know that's often a significant impact. Chronic illness, caring for somebody with a life-limiting illness, the grief of dementia, somebody who has been involved in a motor vehicle collision and has an acquired brain injury. These are all often what we might describe as kind of chronic or kind of ongoing living losses. And they often don't have the sorts of rituals and language that death has.
Chris, let's talk about some of the systemic issues or the structural issues. So what are the bereavement leave entitlements here in Australia?
The current bereavement leave policies sort of nationally are 2 days bereavement leave. which is to me deeply offensive. Again, this sees grief as an experience like the common cold, where we return to normal functioning, you know, very, very rapidly. You know, that's a very strong cultural message about the nature of grief.
Diane, what's the situation in the US when it comes to bereavement leave?
It's pathetic. So I'll echo Chris's sentiment about looking at it like the common cold. In the US, we have no federal bereavement leave legislation. There are six states that do have bereavement leave legislation, but it's really almost up to organizations. And so I think statistically, maybe 60% of organizations offer something. In the US, it tends to be anywhere from 1 to 5 days, depending on the type of loss.
And what would you advocate for when it does come to duration and timing of leave for people who've experienced profound loss, Diane?
I've done some research on that also. And so regardless of what the organization's bereavement leave policy is, if a manager themselves experienced bereavement, they would say to the employee, take as much time as you need. And so I think organizations are hesitant to give employees more time because they feel like they'll be taken advantage of. But we looked at like 8 different leave policies, and on average, employees took between 4 to 8 days. So they did not abuse the policy. But if I had to recommend something, I would say allow 3 weeks flexibly, right, across the year, but knowing that not everyone is going to take that. And so I think you can almost even talk to employees about almost like a common resource pool where people use what they need, but knowing maybe they want to leave more for someone else that might suffer a more significant loss.
Diane, what are the benefits for employers and employees alike when grief at work is handled well?
I think organizations have no idea how much commitment they can engender in their employees when they are treated well. I mean, I heard this consistently. You know, bereavement is such an emotional experience, and we encode memories more strongly when there's strong emotions associated. So whether you're treating your employees poorly or well, like, they are going to remember that. So I think a lot of people talk about employee retention. I actually, in my research of a few thousand people, there were not a lot of people left the organization. But I think what happens is people become less committed. They become less engaged, right? So you still have these employees. You're just not getting nearly out of them what you thought. To me, 2 to 3 weeks is the minimum, ideally, right? Like, in some kinds of loss, someone might need 3 months. And the other thing I found in my research is it's not necessarily whether or not people use these supports. Just having the option and the availability functions as a psychological safety net.
Each week, we ask our guests to recommend a practical tip that listeners can take away and practice in their own working lives. So it's called Try This. All right. Chris, what's one tip you'd recommend for someone experiencing grief in the workplace?
The first thing would be to listen to what you're telling yourself. What's the kind of self-talk? Is it, I should be doing better than this? And so I think often as grievers, we're very critical and we say things to ourselves that a near and dear friend wouldn't. Recognize that grief is effortful, it's tiring, it's exhausting. Grief is the price we pay for love, as often has been said. Love is a powerful emotion, as in grief. And so I think the first would be treat yourself with kindness and tenderness, first of all.
Beautiful. Thank you. Diane, what's the most helpful thing employers or managers can do to help someone who's grieving?
I think offering the flexibility, right? Because there's two components. There's almost the socio-emotional support, and then there's the pragmatic support. So, you know, the pragmatic support, I think, is flexibility, because not all managers are really good emotional support people, right? So, you know, and I think to Chris's point, like, yes, we have this mentality of let me fix this. That is the wrong approach with grief. And, you know, some managers are really good with really just witnessing, because I think when someone is experiencing that level of grief, they really need to be seen in their grief. And that is so hard, because you have to be willing to tolerate and sit with whatever it brings up for you. So that's why with managers, I always lean toward, you know, the pragmatic, offer flexibility in any way that you can.
Thank you so much, Diane.
It was so great to be here with you, Lisa.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Lisa.
Diane Bergeron is a social psychologist and senior research scientist at the Centre for Creative Leadership. Chris Hall, psychologist and CEO of Grief Australia. And look out for a bonus episode with four simple steps you can take, whether you're a leader or a colleague, to help someone at work who's grieving. It will be out this Wednesday. And if you like and subscribe to our program on the ABC Listen app, it'll pop up in your feed as soon as it's ready. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. If you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app. Tap the heart to follow all of our stories. This episode was produced by Michelle Weeks. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naar, Melbourne. Until next time, love your work.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.